This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast that follows our journey of investing. Whether you're an absolute beginner or approaching Warren Buffett status, our aim is to help break down your barriers from beginning to dividend. My name is Bryce, and as always, I am joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going, bro?
I'm good, Bryce. I'm excited for this episode. We are bringing back an industry deep dive.
Yeah, we haven't done one in a while.
Yeah. And it's an industry that... we are interested in, but probably haven't spoken a lot about on the show. Everyone loves tech. Yes. Yeah, we speak about tech a lot. But tech is selling off a little bit recently. A few people are a bit nervous. Extremely high valuations. That everything needs to go right to justify some of them. And so we're going to the opposite end of the market, and we're saying, basically, every asset class is at an all-time high. There's some risk. Look, I'm getting a bit nervous. And you've been a perma bear for the last, 4 years, 5 years, calling a bear market every year. 2021 might be the year that I become the bear and get a bit nervous. And so the industry we're going to talk about today is on the more defensive side. Yeah. And may help calm my nerves.
Yeah, this is right up your alley.
Is it? Well, anyway, without further ado, the industry that we're going to be talking about today is infrastructure.
So infrastructure.
Investing in infrastructure. And Bryce and I had a bit of a debate around what even is infrastructure. So we'll be getting into all of that, how you can invest in it, what it is. But before we do, a bit of housekeeping. And I can see Bryce is playing with his phone there and he's very excited talk about a particular stock. So I'm going to shut up and let you have your moment.
Well, I'm just looking here. But anyway, first point of housekeeping, Ren, is the listener survey is still active.
Yes.
So please, if you haven't already, head to our social media channels, and there's going to be some links in our Instagram bio or on our Facebook discussion group where you can fill out our listener survey. And if you do complete it in full, you go in the running to win $500. It'll really help us understand what we're doing well at Equity Mates, what we could be doing better, and to help provide content that is going to help you on your investing journey. So please head over and fill that out.
Yeah, a few of the responses so far asking for crypto content. We've got a crypto email. That's where we're putting all our crypto content. At this stage, we're not going to do a spin-off podcast. But, if that's what you want, keep sending those suggestions in. If you don't want it, make sure you fill out the survey so you can counter the weight of crypto requests coming through.
Yes.
We do this for the Equity Mates community. We hope that you guys get something out of it. And so tell us what you want us to do more of and what you want us to do less of.
Second piece of housekeeping, Ren, before we do jump into this, is I just want to touch base on the stock of the year. You would know that, for those that have been with us for a while, at the start of the year, we both put forward our stock pitches, and Alec put forward Tencent. And I went a bit off-piste and chose a stock that hasn't actually...
hadn't actually listed.
Yeah, hadn't actually listed. And that was Roblox. It has listed overnight through a direct listing in the United States. It didn't actually IPO. It kind of snuck on mid-session. And it's now trading at about $69, I think. To be honest, I'm not sure what it listed at. But anyway, I'm active now, Ren.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, direct listings are... There's no like IPO price that the level sets. It's just like stock starts trading at a certain time and the market sets the price.
Yeah.
But I think the report was that it was up 55% from where it first traded to the end of the session.
From where it first traded, end of the session, market cap of $38 billion. It is the fastest growing computer game in the world at the moment. And yeah, look, we're both live now. It is up, 54%.
So you're beating me. Tencent was up about 30%. It's now up 15%.
30%, nice.
Yeah. So not... Well, I mean... For new equity mates, my history in this competition has been...
You'd normally be down 60.
Honestly, it's like the kiss of death if I pick you as the stock of the year. So hopefully Tencent keeps its head above water. Roblox, very strong start.
Will it hold?
Will it hold?
Will it hold? I'm nervous. But anyway, look, we're both live. That's the main thing. Let's see how it goes. But let's move on to, I guess, what is the topic of the day, and that is a deep dive into infrastructure.
Yeah, let's do it. So let's start with what is infrastructure, I guess. We were having a bit of a debate about what it was.
Were we?
Yeah, do you not remember? I started by saying, you know, it's things like like the companies are like Transurban, Sydney Airport, and then you were like Sydney Airport is an infrastructure, and then you were talking about like the material companies that...
Oh, yeah. Well, I was coming at it from an investment play, and I can see... well, let's get into this, but...
Well, that's what we're doing. We're getting into it.
I think that when I think about investing in infrastructure, there's two ways to do it. There is the Transurban way, which is obviously building infrastructure and owning infrastructure.
Yeah, owning and operating infrastructure.
Owning and operating infrastructure. You classify airports in that, which obviously ports. But then also I think if you know, the government was to come out and spend a lot of money on infrastructure projects, there are a lot of fringe companies that you can invest in that will benefit from the spending of infrastructure. So when I think about it from that point of view as well, it's the building of infrastructure as well that you can...
So you're thinking like the Borrells and the...
The concrete companies, the construction companies, the surveyors of land, all those businesses that benefit from infrastructure projects, not only those that own and operate infrastructure.
Yeah. So I get what you're saying. I would say that's the construction industry, not infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not saying that they fall in the industry, but it's it can be, they are an infrastructure play.
Okay. So for this episode, when we're talking about infrastructure, I think we're going to use my definition. Okay. So what is infrastructure then, at least for this episode? Well, I mean, I'm going to read something that Macquarie wrote.
Okay.
Because if we're not stealing from experts, what are we doing? there's no points for originality in investing. So per Macquarie, infrastructure provides essential products or services which are necessary to support economic and social activity. Infrastructure typically has strong strategic position, i.e. a monopoly or a duopoly. This is because significant capital is usually required to construct the assets, resulting in high barriers to entry for would-be competitors. And there's a few other things that we can add to that, but...
And by the way, Macquarie is one of the biggest infrastructure players in the world.
I love the idea that you can't have credibility in defining it unless you own a lot of it.
Yeah, well, imagine if... Yeah, true.
But yeah, I think so. It's probably best explained through examples. It's like, so electricity, water, gas utilities, energy pipelines, airports, somewhat controversially, but we won't worry about that. This is all, toll roads, seaports, communications infrastructure...
What about a wind farm?
Well, this is an interesting one. Would you say a coal-fired power station is infrastructure, or is it like electricity? Is it energy generation?
Could be both.
Yeah, and then like data centers.
Again, I mean, you could be both.
Yeah. So I think the point is there are some things that we know. Just naturally infrastructure, like a toll road just makes sense. And then there are some which are infrastructure in the most natural sense of the word, you know, like the big capital intensive assets that are built by, you know, governments or the private sector that have long lives and that in theory provide a long-term stable revenue source. From an investment perspective, there's a few things that infrastructure is really useful for, and some of those edge cases like wind farms and data centers don't quite fit it as well. So, like, I mean, let's talk about why you would invest in infrastructure. So high capital costs, like they're very expensive to build, and then your classic examples of infrastructure have local monopolies. So Sydney Airport is still the only airport in town. Some of Transurban's toll roads, you know, it's not like another toll road can be built next door. Mm-hmm. The Port of Sydney, you know, the Port of Newcastle, like they own local monopolies. You can't just set up a startup port next
hard
door.
Hard to compete with.
So the combination of high capital costs and local monopolies create these high barriers to entries, which make them very defensible assets. So as an investor, you can invest in them and you can enjoy long-term predictable cash flow, and there's pricing power because of those high barriers to entry, and so you can increase prices with inflation. So think about toll roads. You know, we just interviewed an expert who was talking about Transurban's tolls being $9 on a road.
Yeah, crazy. Like,
they can increase prices with inflation. And so getting back to the wind farms and the data centers point, it's like some of the elements of infrastructure from an investment lens are there with those assets.
Capital intensive,
long-term, pretty stable and predictable cash flows. But at the same time, some of them aren't there. So like
anyone can set up a data center.
Data center contracts are relatively short-term. Anyone can set up a competing data center. Wind farms, same thing. So yes, they are infrastructure. Like if you went to the Department of Planning or Infrastructure Australia, or you went to Scott Morrison, of course wind farms and data centers would fall under his definition of infrastructure. As an investor, you can definitely invest in them, and some of those companies are killing it at the moment, but in terms of the key characteristics you're looking for when you're talking about investing in infrastructure, some of them are there, some of them aren't.
You know, we speak about companies with moats, and if you're looking at true infrastructure play, you know, a lot of these companies have pretty sizable moats, as you've already pointed out. The Transurbans, the Sydney Airports, starting up, the barriers of entry are pretty high. Yeah, so if you want a good example of a strong moat, then have a look at these companies. But on the flip side, Ren, at the same time, due to, I guess, the essential need for a lot of these infrastructure companies and developments, government does play a pretty hands-on role compared to some of the other investments we can make.
Yes.
And that sort of can have impact.
It can. I mean, in both the positive and the negative sense. So, I mean, the role of government is huge in infrastructure for obvious reasons. The biggest one being they build a lot of it.
Yeah.
Either the government builds it themselves, or these days you see a lot of public-private partnerships where, you know, the government and Transurban work together to build a toll road or something like that. So due to the nature of these services, like electrical utilities, water utilities, like they're like key services. So the government heavily regulates them, which in one sense can be bad for investors, probably good for society, definitely good for society. Yeah, yeah. But for investors, it means sometimes, you know, there's limits on how much you can raise prices and stuff like that. On the flip side, though, sometimes the best monopoly can be a government-enforced monopoly. Like, if you're the electrical utility, or if you're Sydney Water, you're not threatened by a rival water utility that thinks they can be more efficient and offer customers lower prices, because like the government protects your water utility monopoly. Now, they're not privatized, I don't believe, but like if they were, then yeah. I think a lot of the UK's water utilities are privatized at the moment. Mm. But they're still protected by the government.
Mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, government plays a massive role. I think let's, before we just get too messy, let's just structure this. So, we've talked about what is infrastructure. We've talked about some of the reasons you would invest in the role of government. But let's just like quickly tick off maybe why it's an interesting asset class to invest in, some of the risks, then talk about the industry outlook, and then talk about some of the ways you can actually invest.
Sure.
So let's start with why you would actually invest. Like, why is it an interesting asset class?
Long-term, stable, relatively.
Yeah.
As you've already pointed out, it also provides opportunity to have that sort of government protection, so to speak. And in some, well, most instances, they provide a good return or income, similar to a bond. People would equate them to a bond in the sense that you put them in for a long period of time and they'll just continue to tick over and pay out a dividend.
Yeah, yeah. Massive dividend payers.
Yeah.
It's like everyone talks about like stocks and bonds, like stocks being income, stocks being more growth. Infrastructure probably sits squarely between those two. Like it provides more income than a bond.
Yeah.
And it has less risk than equities.
Yeah.
But also less growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about from your point of view, anything that I missed?
No, I think that's the main thing. I think, you know, the interplay of, and we can talk about this more later, but the interplay of inflation and interest rates and the valuation on infrastructure assets is really interesting, and it will probably become quite relevant. But in terms of why you might look at infrastructure in a inflationary environment is if these assets have local monopolies, they can increase their prices. Like if Sydney Airport started charging Qantas more money to every time they wanted to land a plane or taxi a plane, what are Qantas going to do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we pulled a quote from Magellan about how they sort of speak about infrastructure, and they say that it is an appealing asset class. When strictly defined, it delivers stable inflation-linked returns above those offered by inflation-linked bonds with risk below that of equities. So pretty much exactly what you've just said.
Actually, we've gone this whole episode without talking about Warren Buffett. One of his most famous quotes, his favorite investment would be the only toll bridge into town.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, he owns a railroad.
He does. Owns
energy and what's his other big insurance? Apple. Yeah, not quite, but he's got a big infrastructure play there.
But yeah, I think like people conceptually get it. Like it's like it's roads, it's bridges, it's airports, it's ports. Like it's those big pieces of infrastructure. So they're the reasons why you would invest it. Let's quickly touch on the risks and then take a break.
Sure.
So the first, I guess the first risk is...
Is it boring?
Well, yeah.
Who wants to own a road?
It is quite boring, yeah. There's...
But there is nothing wrong with that. I should caveat that. I say that just because it's not like investing in the growth tech stocks, but they do certainly play a very important role in portfolios. Yeah, yeah.
I think the biggest risk is like, what's your investing goals? Like if you're 20 and you want to, you know, grow and become a millionaire, like it's low growth, I think. And some of these companies find a way to engineer growth by like buying more assets and stuff like that. But each piece of infrastructure in and of itself is low growth.
Yeah.
Another risk to my mind is that they often get valuations wrong. So in theory, valuing a piece of infrastructure is conceptually straightforward because it's you can figure out the life of an asset. You can figure out how many people are going to use it, how many customers, whatever, and then how they're going to be charged for that. Or you can figure out like what the government's going to pay the utility, and then you just do a discounted cash flow, and you know you factor in any capital costs for maintenance and stuff like that. But people often get valuations of infrastructure wrong. You know, government massively overestimate how many people are going to use it and stuff like that. So, I mean, we're not in a position to buy infrastructure ourselves. We're not going to be dropping $50 billion on the Port of Sydney or whatever.
Maybe one day.
But that's something, you know, if you're investing in a fund, you've got to hope they're good.
Yeah. 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 All right. Well, we'll take a quick break and then we'll come back and have a look at the industry outlook for infrastructure.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, the industry outlook, Ren, obviously with a lot of COVID sort of spending coming through from big governments at the moment, infrastructure is always where governments turn generally to try and boost economy, pour money into the building of new roads, new railways, new ports. So it's no surprise that we're sort of starting to see that at the moment. And the supply and demand dynamic for infrastructure is pretty fascinating.
Yeah. Let's start with the supply. So the amount of infrastructure being built or being made available to invest in. You're right. Like, let's build our way out of a recession is
classic.
Watch
Utopia on ABC to get an insight into how that all works.
There was a running joke when Trump was in office that he was about to do Infrastructure Week, and it was like it was the one of the first things on his agenda.
The wall.
That is that infrastructure.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole.
When Steve Bannon, first thing he wanted to do was infrastructure because he thought it would bring both sides of America together, fix their crumbling infrastructure, big win, $1 trillion infrastructure package. 4 years, the administration kept saying it's about to be infrastructure week, we're about to do it. Never happened. Now Biden is talking about doing a $1 trillion plus infrastructure package, same thing. I mean, he probably can stay focused longer than
likely to get it done.
But yeah, so the US probably going to do a big infrastructure bill soon. A lot of the rest of the world are probably going to do something similar to stimulate the economy. You know, China's building. We're seeing iron ore prices rise on the back of demand for more steel and stuff like that. So the world is getting ready to build. McKinsey did a study and suggest the world needs to spend $5.5 trillion to upgrade infrastructure. KPMG did a study and suggested that developing Asian countries need to spend $1.7 trillion a year for the next decade to maintain growth and tackle poverty.
To maintain GDP growth?
Yeah.
$1.7 trillion.
Yeah, per year. And so,
per year?
Yeah, over the next decade.
Jeez.
Yeah. So it's just like...
That's not good.
There's a feeling that we should build to stimulate growth out of COVID, and there's also a need to build. Yeah. Like, you know, Italy had the bridge collapse. The US infrastructure is crumbling. Like, there's a lot of need to build more infrastructure. So on the supply side, I guess the need to build more infrastructure is one thing. The other thing to think about when we're thinking about industry dynamics is privatization of infrastructure. And that's been, the last 30 years in Australia? We've privatized a lot of infrastructure, ports, rail...
AusPost is on the chopping block. Not infrastructure, though.
Telstra?
Maybe.
Telecoms. Maybe. I mean, yeah, like some... like NBN is infrastructure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's infrastructure.
I don't think so. It does pay a dividend anyway. So that's the supply side.
Yeah. And so, yeah, on the supply side, there's a need to build. There likely will be more building. Things will get privatized, although we've privatized a lot already. And New South Wales want to privatize the buses. Infrastructure or not infrastructure?
Not infrastructure.
Let's talk about demand.
Yeah. So you've just said, Ren, that $1.7 trillion per year needs to be spent. And there's obviously, that's the supply side. But where is all of this money coming from? Is there a desire to spend this, or is there demand to actually do it?
Yeah, well, I was thinking about demand in a different way. I was thinking about demand in terms of investment demand.
Okay, which I'm sure there is plenty of, given the Canadian pension funds of the world.
Yeah, well, that's exactly
the Norwegian.
That's exactly where my mind went as well. Canadian pension funds.
Yeah.
Not any other country's pension funds. Yeah. Canadian pension funds.
Well, they're spending billions and billions and billions in this space.
Yeah.
There's money everywhere.
Yeah.
And obviously, these huge pension funds around the world no longer can be looking at the investments in the Woolworths and the Coles of the world because they just can't spend enough money, and infrastructure projects are where they can turn to spend money and invest and support these sorts of projects. So I'm assuming that's what you mean by demand.
Yeah, there's just massive pools of capital chasing long-term, stable, inflation-protected investments.
Yeah,
Canadian pension funds, Australian super funds, private equity. There's just so much capital in the world at the moment, and capital's so mobile now that, you know, it's truly borderless. Like, you know, there's ASX-listed companies that operate roads in the US and stuff like that. It's just, you know, everyone's looking for places to park their money, and you're right, like, rather than trying to put it all into large cap stocks, like the amount of money that these pension funds, superannuation funds and stuff are looking to spend, infrastructure is a real natural home for them.
Yeah.
And so when we're talking about the supply and demand dynamics of infrastructure, Magellan did a really interesting piece on the UK water utilities and the valuations that they're getting, because there's a couple that are two that are publicly listed and then a bunch that are private but have had transactions, and the private ones, which in theory should be valued cheaper than the publicly listed ones because there's an illiquidity discount, like it's harder to buy and sell it, so the value should be less in theory. They would like being bought and sold for so much higher than their publicly listed peers just because there's so much money chasing, you know, stable long-term infrastructure assets. So if you have a super fund in Australia, if you have a 401k in the US, if you have any form of retirement saving around the world, you're probably exposed to infrastructure through these retirement funds.
Yeah, or the big investment banks. So let's move on and close out the episode with obviously the most important piece, Ren, as retail investors. How can one actually get involved in infrastructure, and what are the investment options?
Yes.
Obviously, Sydney Airport. SYD, I'm pretty sure is the ticker. Yeah,
Bryce's gusto for this episode has been so low ever since he realized that he might have to acknowledge that Sydney Airport is infrastructure.
Yes.
At a high level, I think the options are infrastructure stocks themselves. We'll get into that.
Yep.
Then there's infrastructure unit trusts, listed infrastructure funds, so like LICs that invest in infrastructure, unlisted infrastructure funds.
So you've got to go through the big banks to get that, the investment banks.
Yeah, or like Magellan has one, but theirs might be listed now as well. Theirs is listed, I'm pretty sure. Macquarie have a bunch of unlisted infrastructure stuff. Ausbil, you know, we've spoken to Tobias Bucks, who's a small caps manager there, but they have infrastructure funds. Mm-hmm. There's a heap out there. And then there's a bunch of other unlisted ones. Then there's also a few ETFs. So I went on the ASX website and they've got a page that lists all of their, for some reason they call them infrastructure funds, but like it's just their actual stocks. It's not like LICs included.
We'll take that up with the ASX.
So seven ASX-listed infrastructure companies. Transurban, actually, and you know what? I'm pretty sure there's more that I can think of. Like, they've got Sydney Airport listed, but they don't have Auckland International Airport.
Oh, hold on. So maybe Sydney's not meant to be on there.
we'll take it up with the ASX one way or another. But according to the ASX, the seven that they've got listed are Transurban Group, ASX ticker TCL, Sydney Airports, SYD, Spark Infrastructure Group, SKI, Atlas Arteria, ALX, Infigen Energy, IFN, AusNet Services, AST, and APA Group, APA. So there are a few of the individual companies that you can invest in. Obviously, Transurban and arguably Sydney Airport are the biggest two.
Arguably. Now, we'll make sure we've got those in the show notes. I've just thrown them down in our notes now. So if you did want to have a quick squeeze at what we've just spoken about there,
so that,
they'll be in there.
Yeah, so they're the individual companies. There's also some ETFs and funds. This list is by no means exhaustive, but ETFs, Global Core Infrastructure, ticker Core is classic. An ETF. VanEck, FTSE Global Infrastructure, ticker IFRA. Another ETF, Vanguard, has a Global Infrastructure Index, VBLD. Magellan have a listed infrastructure fund, MICH. Basically, there's a bunch. Then there's also companies that are just heavily exposed to infrastructure, like Macquarie and stuff like that. Yeah. Macquarie did have a listed infrastructure vehicle, didn't they? But it, from what I could tell, it's no longer listed.
Publicly listed.
Yeah.
I'm actually not sure. And then, of course, Ren, you can't forget, as I said right at the start, if you think about it in a little bit of a different way and you want to take advantage of the infrastructure spending that is going on, think about the companies that will be exposed to that spending. It's your construction companies, as we said at the start of the episode. So don't just limit yourself to thinking direct infrastructure play, but they don't have the same characteristics that we've obviously just spoken about. That's the main thing to remember. Quickly to close out, Ren, do you own any infrastructure?
Yes. I bought some Sydney airports. Well, do I own infrastructure? I'll leave that up to you. But I bought some Sydney airport at the depths, or like as COVID started to recover.
Yeah.
I don't own any Transurban. I own Macquarie Group, parent bank. And I own Magellan Group. So I guess there's some exposure to the performance of infrastructure. But yeah, not heaves.
Yeah, same. Don't have Sydney Airport because it's not an infrastructure play. And but I do have Macquarie. But otherwise, look, I've enjoyed doing this because something I haven't really paid it too much sort of research attention to, I think primarily because of the function of infrastructure within a portfolio and for what I'm trying to get out of my portfolio, I don't think it plays a huge part.
Yeah.
At this stage in my investing journey.
Yeah, like if you were moving to from like grow, what do they call it, accumulation phase to retirement survival phase or whatever, then when income becomes more important, infrastructure probably plays a bigger role. But well, actually, I was going to ask you this. How do you think about infrastructure in terms of diversification? Like if I own a bunch of ASX 200 stocks and then I own some infrastructure stocks, am I diversified? Or am I more diversified?
Honestly, if we're talking Australia and you own the ASX 200, you're going to get all the infrastructure players anyway.
Yeah. Well, okay. The question was poor. That's on me. It's more like, do you think of infrastructure as a separate asset class?
I know what you're getting at. Yes. Yeah, I do. In the way that it functions in a portfolio and the way that the reasons that people buy it and the reasons we've spoken about in this episode, the characteristics of it and why it is generally seen as that middle ground between a bond and an equity in some, it's its own sort of pseudo asset class. Yeah.
Yeah. In some ways it moves differently. It's uncorrelated to stocks in some ways. Then there's this whole interest rates, inflation and infrastructure discussion that... Yeah. I'm guessing you don't want me to get into.
No. We've reached the end of the episode, Ren. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to cut you off there. But if you'd like to hear more from Ren, I'll give you his mobile number and you can give him a call.
Look, very quickly, infrastructure is it has pricing power, so it's inflation protected. But if interest rates rise, cost of capital increases, and returns on a relative basis compared to like bond yields and stuff also changes. That nice. Was my 25 words or less.
Jeez, I don't think I've ever heard you do that. But look, that does bring us to the end of the episode. I hope you've managed to get something out of that is helping you on your investing journey. And if infrastructure is something that you've been looking to put into your portfolio, hoping we've been able to break it down in a way that is a bit more manageable and understandable for you.
And if there's any of those Canadian pension funds out there that are looking for places to park some cash... hit us up.
Yes, hit us up. Yes. A reminder to everyone that we obviously do have Comedian v. Economist. We also have Meet, Pay, Love and Get Started Investing in the Equity Mates Media Podcast Network. So if you're looking for some more podcast, I guess, stuff to listen to, go and listen to them. Podcast stuff? That's not very good, is it?
What else would you be looking for podcasts for if you weren't trying to listen to them as well?
Good question. Head to our website if you'd like more information, or you can hit us up with an email at contact@equitymates.com. But as always, great to chat stocks, Ren, and looking forward to next week.
You've nailed your tight intro. Homework
need
for the week is
the
tight
outro. Need to work on that.
But anyway, until then, good to chat.
Equity Mates Investing Podcast is a product of Equity Mates Media. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional finance, legal, or tax advice. The hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast are not financial professionals and are not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement and, if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. Do not take financial advice from a podcast. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the Equity Mates website, where you can find ASIC resources and find a registered financial professional near you. In the spirit of reconciliation, Equity Mates Media and the hosts of Equity Mates Investing Podcast acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea, and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.